courses at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
Various incantations of folk, acoustic, and Americana. Join me every other Saturday, the first and third of every month. My name is Mia. I'm host of Folk in A Minor, right here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
Hey, funk rock fans, this is the Hallmark coming at you once again, telling you it's time to tune in for that Cosmic Slop, Saturday afternoon from 2 to 4, where I'm serving up the finest in old school funk and rock on the only station that's still making waves, 89.3 WHFR. Shout out.
Allison Brown, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn, broadcasting the best music since 1985.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is a Mr. Butch Witkowski. Mr. Witkowski has a background in law enforcement, mainly in homicide for about 12 years, and he is a former chief investigator and state section director for MUFON, or the Mutual UFO Network of Pennsylvania. And today is a director of the UFO Research Center in Pennsylvania, a group of professionals who have organized to perform in-depth investigations of UFO and abduction phenomena, including startling reports of human mutilations, which mirror the evidence found at the scene of cattle mutilations. And Butch has been interviewed by numerous documentaries or on numerous documentaries and radio shows to include Art Bell's Coast to Coast and X-Zone. Also, although human mutilations are rare, these grotesque events have been reported and documented around the world, but have been strategically kept out of mainstream media. So I feel obligated to warn our listeners that the following discussion is graphic and may be frightening to some listeners. However, if true, and there is much evidence to suggest that it is a facet of the UFO phenomenon that should be known to the public at large. So if you're squeamish, you might want to go rake the leaves or something and come back to WHFR in an hour. With that said, I hope you stay with us. But now let's welcome to the show Butch Witkowski. Hello, Butch.
And how are you, David?
I am very good, thank you. And yourself?
Very well.
Very good.
Just got done with a great supper and got my favorite drink in front of me, which is iced tea. And I'm good.
Very good. Okay. Let's start by, I always ask this question because there have been so many guests on that that were former skeptics, that are former skeptics. And so I'm going to ask you, what first stimulated your interest in the UFO phenomenon?
My first sighting was pretty traumatic.
Yeah, they all are, the first one, yeah.
Took place in Tucson, Arizona, standing there with a group of folks, and we looked up all pretty much at the same time. And there was an object that was so unbelievably big that I just couldn't even believe what I was looking at. At least 3 football fields in length, maybe 6, 7, 8 stories tall.
Hmm.
Burnt bronze in color. Had a couple lights on the side. Weren't flashing or anything. Just looked like something, like a marker light on a car. Just hovering above a mountain. And very silent. We didn't feel anything like static or anything like that. And there was no noise. And it kind of rose up and down a couple of times, maybe 3, 4. And then it went straight up and stopped and then shot out of sight so fast you couldn't believe it.
How far away from this object were you?
From where I was standing to a mountain, line of sight, probably 2.5, 3 miles.
Hmm.
And so I called the sheriff's department, called the Tucson Police Department, called the radio stations, called Davis Monthan Air Force Base, called the Tucson Airport, called everybody I could think of, and nobody saw anything.
No.
Now, the guy standing with me was the a neighbor who was retired now, but he was at that time, he was the head of all the prisons in Arizona, very well educated. Law enforcement for over 30 years, and he saw the same thing I saw.
Hmm.
So I just, after looking at a few things, I just dropped it. And then I was watching TV one day, and there had a show on UFOs, and it just that just stuck something in me that I just had to know what I saw.
Hmm.
And that was 24, 25 years ago, and I've been at it ever since.
Very good. So, looking at this object, I know that was quite a ways away, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
2 miles. And then the mountain was 2 miles, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, so how far would you estimate or guesstimate this object was from you? Not the mountain, but the object.
Probably, I'm going to say 3 mile, 4 mile at the most.
Okay. And it would be the size of a bus or a plane?
3 football fields.
Three.
It was huge.
My God.
It was just huge.
And just shot off.
It was just hovering.
Yep.
And
yeah.
And then it kind of moving up and down just a little, very slightly, and then it went straight up, and then it just shot off, and it was gone.
Hmm.
And it went right over Tucson, right over North Tucson, so I don't see how anybody else did not see it.
Oh, I'm sure they did. It just went unreported or... When it was reported, nope, didn't see anything. Nothing on radar, nothing, no place, nothing to see here. Move on.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, I dropped it. I, again, was just watching a TV program. It was showing something on UFOs, and it just got in my craw and took it from there. And I tried to do it by myself, and I was just stumbling around through paperwork and just amassing tons of printer paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I joined MUFON, and I thought, well, that would give me, some headway into that. And after a few years with them, I just decided that, I needed to do things differently, and here we are. The group was formed in 2009. We're in 7 states and 1 overseas, and we have 3 more states coming on board.
Mm.
We have a cold case unit, which studies nothing but cases that have already been closed.
Mm.
So I guess where I kind of zeroed in on was abduction, and that was by mistake. I was asked to speak at a conference and talk on abduction, and I really didn't know a whole lot about it, so I did some studying, and I thought, oh, okay, so I pretty much got this down. But when I was doing the abduction thing, I came across something that said human mutilation, and started looking into that, and I've been at that now for a good 5 or 6 years.
Hmm. Okay, so you say that they mirror the cattle mutilations.
Identical.
In evidence?
Yes.
Okay.
In evidence, in forensics, in photography, in photographs, everything is identical.
Hmm. Give us an example of some of these cases. I heard your speech at MUFON, and you mentioned the Todd Cease case.
The Todd Cease case here in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
It's not really so much a mutilation case. I mean, a lot of people would like to make it that. But we've been at that now steadily, the cold case unit, and we have 5 investigators across the country that have been looking into it now for 4 years.
Hmm.
We finally got the documentation we were looking for. We're starting to put the timeline together, and the case just gets stranger as you go along.
Tell us about it.
Todd Cease left his home early one morning to go spot some pre-season deer up on Montoursville Ridge in Montoursville, Pennsylvania, and told his wife he'd be back around noon, which he evidently did a lot. And come noontime, Todd didn't show up. So about 2 o'clock, the search is mounted for Todd. It's very hot in the area. The temperature is very high, humid, so everybody was kind of worried about, that he got something, maybe heat stroke or something like that.
Mm.
He was on a four-wheeler. They found the four-wheeler. There was no signs of any struggle or accident. The four-wheeler had fuel. Keys were there, but no Todd. So 200-plus police, firemen, rescue personnel, search dogs, cadaver dogs, even a diver went into the pond on the property, and they found nothing. And they did find one boot that he was wearing up in a tree.
In a tree?
In a tree. And the search was called off the first day, pretty late in the early evening, but late in the day. And it resumed the next morning. And one of the rescuers saw something pale in a thicket of brush adjacent to the pond on the property. And they had to use saws to cut into the bramble bush. It's very thick. And when they got in there, there was the body of Todd Cease, clad in underwear and emaciated. Of course, from the heat and everything else, the body wasn't in that great of shape.
Mm-hmm.
He was identified by the chief of police and taken for autopsy. Now, they said there were 2 autopsies, but that's not true. There was only one. The autopsy revealed weeks later that he had died of a cocaine overdose.
Hmm.
Now, I guess the question that always stuck in our mind from day one was, with all these people, cadaver dogs, the guy searched the pond, you've got a cadaver laying within, 150 feet of his home, and the cadaver dogs don't pick it up? I worked with a cadaver dog one time. They found the body 6 foot under.
Wow.
So, how did the body get there? The condition of the body we now know.
The body was not there while they were doing their search, but it showed
correct
up late. How many days later or how many?
The next day.
Okay.
He was actually missing for approximately 40 hours,
okay.
37 to 40 hours.
Okay.
And the case was kept open for a long time. Even when the autopsy, the coroner said that the cause of death was cocaine overdose, trying to get information from police and other people, district attorney's office, coroner, doctors that worked on the case, all said they couldn't talk about it because it was an open case.
Hmm.
Well, the only way you can keep an open case after you have a cause of death in Pennsylvania and probably many other states is it's either a murder or it's it's an unsolved homicide. He had no background in dealing drugs or anything like that. A very close-knit family, kind of like a pillar in the community. And it was quite traumatic for the family.
Yeah.
As you can imagine. The body was returned to the family in a sealed coffin. They never got to see the body.
Gee.
And, but okay. Since we started on this, and we just kept at it. I can't tell you how many times we've been up there already. And people are starting to come forward. Like I said, we got the documentation we were looking for. A lot of people lied. A lot of people are still lying. And hopefully January this year, we're going to be able to come out with the case facts.
Mm-hmm. January
14th? Everything we got is documented. There's nothing that's hearsay or second or third-hand information. Yeah. Everything's been documented.
How high?
And on paper.
How high in the tree was his boot?
It ranged anywhere from 15 feet to 35 feet. But at the same time, you know, when the story first came out, there was evidently three fishermen that were fishing in the river, which is just the other side of the mountain there, the ridge. Yeah. And they said that they saw an object parked above high tension wires, and there was a light beaming down. There was something being pulled up into the light. That was also corroborated by some farmers in the area that were working in the fields that saw the same thing.
Mm.
And then, of course, you know, being that ufology is what it is, the FBI were on the scene. We couldn't prove that.
Yeah.
There's no record of that. They gave us all the records they had for all the dispatches in that area, or you know, for a whole month, and there was no dispatch to the scene of that crime.
No, there wouldn't be. There wouldn't be.
No.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, and I remember you saying something about you asked the officer why it's still an open case, and he threatened to arrest you for
harassment. Arrest for harassment.
Arrest you for harassment.
Yeah. For and as we went on, what's kind of unusual, and we still need just one more piece of paper on that one, is that all the police department that was talking to us really had nothing to do with the case. The case was turned over to the Pennsylvania State Police, which is not unusual for a small police department to turn over to a large department because they just don't have the wherewithal, funds, or a crime lab and all that stuff.
Right. But this body, this Todd Sees case, he was not really mutilated in the way that...
No, not the way people said.
Yeah.
If you look at the early reports that came out, and they were like, I don't know, Peter Davenport was the first one. His was basically following newspaper reports. And then there were two or three other investigators that got involved later on, and the case just started to get embellished more and more and more.
Ah, I see.
But nobody had any documented evidence, and we got it.
Let me ask you this. What about the Holloman Air Force Base?
The Holloman Air Force Base is a very good case. Not a whole lot of information on Sergeant Lovett, but he was there. He was a sergeant in the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
He did die at the base. Of course, the circumstances are a bit foggy. They said it was a training exercise when we pulled up records on that. But, you know, the actual case that came forward back in, I believe it was the early 80s, late 70s when that case came out, where he was downrange with an officer looking for parts from a missile test they just fired off. And the colonel that was with him heard him screaming and ran over top of a little sand dune and saw him being pulled by his leg into a craft and gone. And, of course, the colonel reported everything, and he was immediately arrested.
The colonel was.
For the murder of Sergeant Lovett.
Good Lord.
How they got that all put together, I have no idea.
Because they couldn't put anything else together again.
Probably. And then, you know, the next day the body is found not very far at all from where he was originally taken. The Air Force just flat out says he died during a training accident. But the colonel gave his story, and that story came out. Now, he's long past, so questioning him is not a real good thing. But, you know, there have been a number of cases over the years. In the early 80s, there were cases that came out from special ops firefight in Vietnam, a B-52 crash in Vietnam. The special ops firefight was a group of American special operations soldiers are in Vietnam, and they're walking along, and they come upon a group of aliens loading body parts into plastic or some type of container. They start shooting, we start shooting, we win, they lose, but that's the end of the story. Now, we can put, from military records, we can put there was a special ops group in that particular area. Hmm. But again, the area changes every time somebody writes something about it. The B-52 crash was actually given by a Navy photographer who was sent out to photograph a B-52 crash. Mm-hmm. In the jungle. His story is that when the plane crashed, it didn't really crash. It looked like it was just set down in the jungle with very few areas of damage to the craft. When they went inside, all the occupants, the crew, was mutilated just like cattle. You know, tongue missing, eye missing, side of jaw, etc. Oh. And we cannot find any record of a B-52 crash in Vietnam.
That was the Vietnam case. And how many people were on that plane in Vietnam?
Seven.
And they were all mutilated in the same way as cattle mutilation?
Yes.
Yeah. But they torched the plane, according to documents.
Yeah, and then the plane was torched.
Yeah.
According to the report.
According to the report.
But we can't, like I said, we can't find any information or any record of a B-52 crash in Vietnam.
No,
which
won't.
Is, you know, I'm kind of a skeptic. Mm-hmm. I need to see the proof.
Yeah.
I mean, stories are great,
yeah,
but I really need to see documentation or proof or something.
Yeah.
You know, the two best cases is the Guadaparanga Dam Brazil case in 88 and the Cairo, Egypt case in 2005. That's the last one. The Cairo, Egypt case was family was mutilated basically the same way. Everybody in the house, man, woman, child, cat, dog, chicken, whatever was there was done in.
Jeez.
They blamed a retarded gentleman who was in his, at that time would have been in his late 20s, but had the IQ of a three-year-old, could barely walk, and he was the one that they drug into the court and charged with the murder of this family. He did get an attorney, and she did fight for him, and she got him off the hook. He was released. I did get to speak to her. And she said, till this day, he still has police guard. He's not allowed to leave his house other than to go to the mosque or to go shopping with the family, but the police guard must be in attendance of all time. Mm-hmm. And if he violates that, he will be put in prison for the rest of his life.
And you say he could hardly walk.
This guy, from where the actual incident took place to where this guy lives, is like 30 mile.
Yeah.
And this guy can't walk from probably here to my garage door, which is 25 feet away, maybe.
And doesn't
fall over.
Doesn't drive, right?
No driving, no.
I need to take a quick break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the only station making waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with UFO investigator Mr. Butch Witkowski. And we're talking about human mutilations, not cattle mutilations, not animal mutilations, but the rare form of human mutilations. Let's go back to this Holloman Air Force Base. Remind us of what the details were there. You didn't tell us what about the body that was found. Oh, the colonel. The colonel was arrested.
The colonel was arrested. The body was found the next day. The body was allegedly mutilated very badly. This all took place in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
But when we searched the records for a Sergeant J.P. Lovett, he was there in that time period.
Okay. He was there, but did it say what happened to him?
He died in a training accident.
He died in a training accident.
So when we checked to see what the training accident was, we couldn't find any record of any training accident where a Sergeant J.P. Lovett was killed.
Did he have family?
They don't really let you get into that part. He probably did, but there was no way we could find that out.
Hmm. I was going to say, if you could interview the wife.
Yeah. Yeah, if we could.
Would it be
great.
Yeah, but they won't let you go there. Yeah, don't go there. So
now, the Guadaparanga case in Brazil, that's the best documented. There's never been any backwash on that one at all because We have the autopsy report. We have the statements from the police. We have the statements from the coroner. We have the statements from the forensic people that were on the scene. Yeah. We have the photographs of the crime scene. We have photographs of the body. And we have everything. So
okay, now,
that's the best documented.
You're kind of mixing them up here. What was the Brazil case?
Okay, the Brazil case happened in 1988.
All right.
At the Guadaparanga Dam, which is outside of São Paulo, Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
It's a man-made lake, supplies water to São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
Two fishermen are out in a boat, and they spot what they think is a body lying on the shoreline. They immediately go to shore. They call the police, and the police show up with a forensic team, which is quite unusual. The forensic team photographs everything, documents everything. The pictures are taken of the body at the scene. Death is caused by massive trauma. But some of the things at the scene that are very strange is that in the extreme heat, this body laid for 40 to 72 hours before discovery. There were no signs of rigor mortis or livor mortis. There was no noticeable amount of blood at the scene. There was no bloating of the body. There was no smell. There was no sign of an attack by a predator, or there were no birds picking at the body. And then when you look at the photographs, you know, this is how they documented it. The forensic guys on the scene, they say the decedent is found with the following surgically removed: eyes, left ear, inner ear, lower jaw, inner throat, and tongue. There are 1-inch to 1.5-inch circles, holes, in the following areas where muscle, tissue, and glands are removed: the shoulder, chest, navel, and thigh. The testicles were removed. The prostate gland was removed via the urethral tube. The intestines were removed via a hole in the navel, the lower intestinal tract only. The anus is cored out to the colon. The body presented no signs of bloating, and it is remarkable due to the high heat range at the time of day, at the time of the missing person in the time period of 40 to 72 hours. The autopsy report, which is very conclusive, showed... when we were reading it, when we had it, because we got it in Portuguese, so we had to get it translated. And one term that was in there, which I was familiar with, was vital reaction. And that was mentioned a total of 5 times in the report. Now, what vital reaction is, to help your listeners a little bit here, is it indicates a response of living body tissues to an injury. In other words, if somebody walked up and stabbed you in the arm, you'd pull away, jerk away, do whatever you could.
Yeah.
Well, that would leave marks, black and blue, kind of a traumatized area around that wound where you were stabbed.
Right.
No vital reaction would be if you would stab a dead person. All you're going to have is a hole. There's not going to be any bleeding. There's not going to be any trauma. There's not just going to be a hole. You know, the shape of the knife blade. So what that means is that since every wound that this guy had showed signs of vital reaction, he was alive when this was done.
Good Lord. And all of this, he was alive during.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least most of it.
Well, yeah, in the autopsy, when they removed the skull cap to check the brain, that's where they saw the real damage that actually caused the death. If you would, say, slam your finger in a car door, your brain would register the pain, and there'd be maybe a couple hematomas, little blood vessels that kind of pop, that, you know, because of the shock.
Right.
This guy's brain was covered with that. So he was in massive shock, and he died of massive trauma from the wounds.
Okay, so now this was the Brazil case, right?
That's the Brazil case, yes.
Jeez. Anything else any other gory details we need to know about it?
Well, I guess one of the things with this case is that it was so well documented. I mean, when you look at the knife wounds, knife wounds. When you look at the wounds on this gentleman, and you look at the same wounds on a cattle, they're identical. I mean, a true cattle mutilation, basically the same parts are taken as were taken with this gentleman. The same type of, the same modus operandi as far as the device used. It's a clean cut. It's very, it's circular. It's, well, everybody that ever asked a doctor if they could do that with the new laser scalpel said no. No, you would have a burning of tissue and this, that, and the other. This tissue shows no burning. It's just like a cookie cutter hole. And they are identical in size, and the same things are taken. For some reason, even with cattle mutilations, they don't bother with the upper intestinal tract. It's always the lower. And with this gentleman, it was the same way. Muscle tissue, the eyes. One of the factors that some of these animals and this particular human were alive when this happened was the Snippy case, which was a mutilation of a horse.
Right.
And the two investigators are standing there, and the one guy says now he was looking at the viscous fluid from the eyes after the eyes were removed, and he said, what do you see that's strange about this viscous fluid? And the guy said, well, really nothing. It's just dried viscous fluid. And he says, yeah. He said, but... He said, if the horse was lying down when this happened, the viscous fluid, of course, would flow to the side. Mm. Correct?
Mm.
In this case, the viscous fluid went down the horse's snout to the end of his snout and off. So the horse was standing upright when it happened. I'm investigating a case now in Idaho where a lady was riding on an indoor ring, riding her show horse.
Okay.
She got off the horse, left the horse standing in the middle of the ring. The horse, you know, well disciplined, just stood there. She went to the tack room, retrieved a brush from the tack room, and came out. Mm-hmm. The horse was standing there with a slash from his snout, lower snout, clear back to his rear of his jaw, slashed wide open, and the lower part of the jaw was missing. Blood was on the ground. Now, this horse didn't make a sound.
How long was she gone?
She said in her deposition that she thought maybe 3 to 4 minutes.
Or?
She said she only had to walk 50 feet and back.
Yeah.
And nothing she had to hunt for. She knew where the brush was. She walked in, got the brush, came back, and the horse was still standing there with this huge mark. So, now is that something else we have to look for? Now, they tried to save the horse, but they couldn't. They put the horse down.
Yeah.
But, for the horse not to make a sound, I talked to 4 or 5 different veterinarians. They said that horse would have been screaming his head off.
Yeah, I would see.
He would have been all over that ring.
Yeah.
And there are nothing protruding out of the walls of this indoor ring. There's no nails or boards or anything. It's very smooth all the way around. Matter of fact, in some spots, it's even cushioned. Yeah. So there was no way this was an accident. The horse was standing exactly where she left him. And he was standing in the exact same spot when the veterinarian came in and saw what happened. And
but that was the only thing that happened to this particular horse.
To that particular animal, yes.
Yeah. I guess.
Now, the fact that she was there.
Yeah.
Was that something different?
They only had time for the jaw, huh?
Right.
Good Lord.
But again, the cut. That was the thing that was very predominant when we got to talk to the veterinarian in Idaho. He said that cut was a surgical cut. Mm-hmm. He said that cut was not made by somebody's pocket knife. It was not made by the horse catching his jowl on a nail and ripping it. He said that was a very precision cut. And the removal of the lower jaw was also very precision.
Yeah, I was going to ask if there were any signs of heat involved, like a laser scalpel or...
Not in any case that we've ever seen has there been any indication of a laser being used.
Huh.
Even the new cold lasers. Huh. You know, even they cauterize as they go.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And these things, these are cookie-cutter hole, and there's no bleeding. Matter of fact, there's no blood. In the Brazil case, they actually got, I think it was... less than a quarter of a pint of blood that was mixed with fluid out of the whole body.
Hmm.
And when you look at these cattle mutilations, there's no blood laying around. And if you've ever seen an animal butchered, a cow or a pig,
yeah.
I mean, it's one bloody mess.
Not sure.
And in these cases, there is no blood.
Yeah.
Another thing with the Brazil case, no flies, no bugs,
mm-hmm.
nothing.
Mm-hmm. I had a... that's another thing. The predators don't, you know, the other animals don't want, don't want to go near the body.
No, they'll walk right past a free lunch.
Yeah.
And if you look at pictures of a predator kill and look at a picture of a cattle mutilation, it's no way it's a predator.
Mm-hmm.
Not even a close chance. I mean, a calf killed by a predator. I mean, the first thing they go for is a soft tissue.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the stomach area, and they just tear it apart. I mean, it's just shredded.
Yeah.
And within a matter of hours, the animal's usually covered in flies and larvae, and it's not really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're getting cases of sheep mutilations in the United Kingdom, where, and this has not happened here, but in the United Kingdom, they sent me four pictures, where there is a triangle. How can I describe this? If you would take a triangle and at each point you would punch a hole, maybe the size of a pencil.
Okay.
So you have these three holes in a triangle formation, and the brain is missing. But the rest of the animals butchered the same way as our cattle. You know, the jaw, the eyes, the tongue, the anal area, the udders, whatever. I mean, that's all gone.
Where
in
is
this, in these particular cases, the four pictures they sent me of sheep that they found mutilated had that same triangular puncture wound.
Where is this triangular puncture wound? On the head?
It's right above, to be precise, I have a picture here. It is right above the eye and right... Okay, if you would look at an animal laying on its side, it would be above the eye and right in front of the ear and just maybe an inch and a half above the eye itself.
So on the forehead.
Which takes it right into the brain cavity.
Yeah, forehead area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think the purpose of these excisions are, anyway?
David, I've heard so many explanations. I mean, they all bear something, that they're being used, for these cattle are being used for... experimentations. They're being used for food processing. They're being used for a serum. They're being used for experiments into making up hybrids or developing some type of an animal in flight to feed.
But why would they need this?
And of course, I got to throw this in. A lot of people say, well, it's the U.S. government doing this. Well, that could be. God knows they do enough.
Yeah.
But I find it very hard to believe that they would go through all this trouble when they could, you know, the way they spend money, they could have the biggest cattle ranch in the world.
Yeah, I was going to say, I forget which show it was on that I was being interviewed. But they said, do you think it's the government that's doing this? I kind of chuckled. I said, you know how much a cow costs? $800. I said, the government spends that on a toilet seat. I've never heard of the government stealing toilet seats. And if they did, I doubt if they'd return the toilet seat to the place from whence they stole it. So
right.
That makes no sense.
And then with the human mutilation, though, that's a different story.
Yeah.
That, first of all, I don't know a whole lot about the case because there was never really a lot written about the case, and it took place in Bliss, Idaho.
Hmm.
I'm trying to remember when it was, but it was, I believe, in 1989. Where a gentleman was found out in the middle of nowhere in Bliss, Idaho, mutilated. His equipment that he was carrying, his backpack or whatever, was found a few miles away from where the body was found. And the soles of his feet, he was barefoot. The soles of his feet showed no signs of walking over this rough terrain. I mean, there was no cuts, no abrasions, no dirt, no nothing. Yeah. And investigators at the scene, they said that, you know, the police were just predisposed to say that, hey, you know, the guy just wandered off and died.
Yeah.
And that was it.
What else could they say?
That's all they said.
Yeah.
Body gone, guy gone.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah. I got to take one more minute to remind your listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM out of Dearborn, Michigan, out of Henry Ford Community College. It's 89.3 FM on your radio, WHFR.FM on your computer. I'm David Twitcher. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with UFO investigator Butch Witkowski. And also, Butch, going back to this, there are three things. I was going to mention there are three things at the skeptics site, and one is predators. We touched on that. The other is government experimentation. Also, satanic cult. What do you? How do you answer that?
Well, we have a gentleman in our group. He actually runs one of our mobile units out in western Pennsylvania, who is an ex-police officer and was trained by the FBI to study demonic murders, kidnappings, and such, rituals. And so when you search back through all the stuff, even all the court cases that were held, there is nothing like anything that we're dealing with human mutilation or cow mutilation.
Yeah.
He said their stuff is pretty cut and dry. You know, they might dismember a cat, but take that just the head. They may dig up a body that's been buried for 35 or 40 years, but they'll just take certain bones. He said they have a pretty set way of doing things. He said never in the history of when they started doing this, which is back in the 60s, according to some of the paperwork he showed me, did they ever come up with anything like this. So I rule out satanic cults.
Yeah.
Not saying that they wouldn't do it, but first of all, where would they get the technology to do what is happening to cattle and to the human?
How could they do it is the question, huh?
So, you know, these guys most likely use a pocket knife and their daddy's old hatchet.
Yeah. Yeah. So what percentage would you say of people that go missing? I don't know, there are a lot of missing person cases all over the world every day, really. What percentage?
Those numbers are staggering.
Yeah.
But I know what they are. I've been keeping an eye on them now for the last 5 years.
Yeah. Most of them are found dead or alive, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're never found. I mean, they're just gone.
Wait a minute. You're saying most of the missing persons are never found?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay, give me a percentile.
Okay, I would say, let's do it this way. This is from the National Crime Information Center statistics, which is what they do and how they catalog everything is every year, every police department, sheriff's department, any law enforcement agency in the United States gets a series of paperwork that they fill out, and it'll be stuff that's so mundane, like how many bicycles were stolen, how many burglaries did you have, how many rapes, murders, etc., how many missing persons, age of the missing person, date, you know, it was missing, was the person found. So I started looking at those numbers in 2008, and in 2008, according to the NCIC, which is put together by the FBI, 778,164 missing persons reports were filed for that year. 95% are found. 75% are runaways under 18 years of age. 20% are spousal abuse, murders, elderly, ransom demands, kidnappings, etc. But the big number that sticks out is 5% are never found. Never. Not a sign. No
okay.
Man, woman, child, no body, no clothing, no whereabouts, no nothing.
Okay, so we're talking 5%, not
90%. Since 1991, there have been a total of 13,861,065 missing persons reports filed. Using the same math that they use, 5%, 693,053 are never found. So in a 17-year period, that's 40,795 people a year that are missing off just the United States. That doesn't count any other country. That's not Canada. That's not, you know, like I'm sure in Africa they could care less how many missing people they have or any other, a lot of places. But we just updated this in 2011. and with the same NCIC, and the numbers are basically the same. It's that same missing 5%.
Why would
it doesn't teeter. It goes from 4.8 to 5.1. It never goes beyond either way in all these years.
Why would,
since 91.
Why would they care less in Africa how many people were missing?
They don't have the wherewithal. You know, you have how many hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of tribes running around, and nobody's keeping track of anybody. Nobody's keeping any paperwork.
They just don't know.
They just don't know.
Yeah.
So how many are missing all over the world? I mean, we know that we have approximately 40,000 missing a year in the United States, and that's been factual since 1991 when they started doing this.
Yeah.
And so what's it like around the world?
Right, right. Well,
which has led me to believe that our space brethren are not benevolent.
Right, right. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess I misunderstood. 95% of those who go missing are
that
found.
Reported missing are found.
Are found. So the majority.
Because, yes.
You know, and then, you know, Jimmy Hoffa has been missing, and doubt if they'll ever find him. I doubt.
He's at 5%.
I doubt if he was abducted by aliens.
But, I don't think so.
No. Well, we can discount him. However, there's still a big number that, and I'm sure out of those that haven't been found, there is a prosaic explanation as to their whereabouts or what happened to them.
And well, they, you know, when we dove into that further, you could deduct probably another 0.5% from that for people that, like, just kind of walked off in the woods and fell off a cliff.
Yeah.
Or were fishing and fell in,
yeah.
Or drove their car off the side of a bridge and they weren't found for 5 or 6 or 8 years.
Yeah.
So, but they say that that number is 0.5% or less.
Hmm.
So 0.5% or less with those kind of numbers really doesn't mean a whole lot.
Yeah, there's still a bunch of them, and yet, in these cases we're talking about the human mutilations we're talking about. These are the bodies that are returned.
Right.
So
is that just our space brethren telling us that they really could care less of what we think we are? So here's what we did, and here's the body, and here's your cattle back, and we're done with it, and you can have what's left over, and see ya.
And sometimes we just won't give it back.
Yeah.
Right? Good Lord. Scary. Very frightening. But how could a human being affect the type of evidence found in animal or human mutilation? I guess we covered that, really, didn't we? And the fact that they really can't. Could a doctor, I mean, could a surgeon affect this type of...
Well, you know, one of the things that I can't even remember who brought it up. It was one of the UFO investigators out there said that the cattle were actually... done by some deranged doctor running around, or the pharmaceutical companies were using some doctors to go out and excise these organs.
I see.
That just kind of is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a pharmaceutical company with the money they make, there again, they could probably build a ranch bigger than the government does.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Frankly,
they are the government.
The guy that died in Brazil, I mean, there was a researcher that said he died of Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
No way. No way.
The guy in Brazil who we were talking about?
Yeah.
Died of Agent Orange.
Yeah. Now, give me a break. I mean, ufology is getting so crazy that nobody does any investigations anymore. I mean, it's just like the better story you can tell, the more popular you become.
Yeah.
And it's sad because there are a lot of young people that are getting involved now, and especially in our group, I know we have a bunch. I mean, they know what they're talking about. You know, they got college degrees in forensics. They've got three of my cold case people all have degrees in forensics.
Mm.
So they know what they're looking at. And to have somebody step forward and saying, well, the gentleman died of Agent Orange is just, it gives me a headache just thinking about it.
But they have to come up with something, don't they?
Well, sure. There's always that next book down the road, and there's the next conference, and...
Yeah.
You know, a fellow at a conference that I just spoke at, as a matter of fact, said to me, he said, you know, after reading all the reports and seeing everything that's going on, he says, I've come to one conclusion. I said, okay, what's that? And he said, well, this has to pertain with ufologists. And I said, okay, what is it? He says that most of these people out there doing this try to find Bigfoot and try to find UFOs and try to find ghosts sitting behind their computer. I said, sad but true.
In most cases, yeah.
I mean, we have two mobile units. They're fully equipped. They have everything from radar communication to satellite communication, radios, every piece of evidence-gathering equipment you can think of, all police-grade. There are new Ford vans. There's one in eastern Pennsylvania, one in western Pennsylvania. We go to the scene. We do what we got to do. And the best way to do it that I found out that always seems to work well is to do it forensically.
Yeah.
Stories are great, and yeah. I've heard a million of them, and most of them should all start out with once upon a time in a galaxy far, far away. But if you look at it with a clear mind and forensically and gather your evidence and look at your evidence and take care of your evidence and have it analyzed and analyze those photographs, you'll find out that there's still that 5 or 6 or 8% that we don't know what it is.
Yeah. So tell us about your particular group and the expertise of some of the members of your group. I know yours is in law enforcement.
The group in Florida is our one of our largest groups. Hmm. They are mainly involved in the study of abduction. Kathleen Martin and Denise Joyner Denise Stoner actually runs the group, and she just wrote a book with Kathleen Martin, who lives not too far away from her.
Mm-hmm.
So in that group, there are some people from NASA. There are some people who are ex-police officers, divers. We have a certified diver here in Pennsylvania that's out in our western end.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen running the Georgia group is abduction. The Missouri group has been around for a while, and they're UFOs and cryptozoology.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman in Poland, in Europe, is mainly into photography. Then there's a Northeast Florida group, which has a clairvoyant and UFO studies, and the Oklahoma group, which studies cryptozoology and UFOs, and our Northern California group, which studies UFOs. And, you know, the background of all these people are, there's a bunch of them that were former MUFON members. There's a bunch of them that were former law enforcement and military.
Mm-hmm.
So they all know what they're doing. We all have the same charge in mind that, you know, we'll listen to the great story, but we need to have the proof.
Right.
And if we don't have the proof and we don't have the truth, then we don't have anything but a story. Unfortunately, I wish more of mainstream ufology would carry that. We've gone after some cases on our website. We post them, historical cases that were under investigation, and if they're highlighted in green, you can click on that and read the report. They're finished cases.
Mm.
And, you know, we tell it the way we found it. So if, you know, if we find out that it was just a crock of bananas, we're going to tell you that. Since 2009, since we started doing this, if we were wrong, somebody would have said something, but nobody's ever sent us an email or a phone call or anything like that, so I guess we were right.
So how many times do you hear these yarns and go out and investigate and find, yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence to support what the guy was saying?
More often than you think.
I'm sorry?
More often than you think.
More often, yeah, good.
Because, you know, since the onset of everybody carrying a camera on their hip, some people have gotten very good with those cameras.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong, they've tried to hoax us already, but we have the wherewithal and we have the programs to take apart any Photoshop that they've ever put together,
yeah,
or CGI, which cost a lot of money. But regardless of that, I mean, we can take a picture apart layer by layer.
Hmm.
And there are some that we just can't come up with an answer to. So, I mean, you know, you get to the person, they say, well, what'd you find? And you say, well, what you saw is what you saw.
Yeah.
You know, or what you saw and sent to me was an upside-down airplane that you erased this and you did this and you did that. But, People are, how should I say this, they're more cognizant of what they're looking at. They're more, they don't look at it and start yelling for Harry to get the shotgun. You know, they'll stare at it, they'll watch it, they'll look at their watch to see what time it is, or they'll get their camera out and take a photograph or a video. We've hammered in over our website through our newsletters, you know, how to do this. Anybody can do this. But, you know, you need a tripod, you need this, you need that. You don't need a whole lot of stuff to do this, but for somebody that just wants a look, I mean, you can take, you can buy night vision for, you know, the class one night vision you could buy for $200 or less.
Mm-hmm.
We use generation three, so ours are more in the $3,000-$4,000 range, but any good video camera, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not telling anybody to go out and buy a Canon XL2 like we have, which is, you know, digital DVD. It's a TV studio grade with infrared. The lens was $3,000. So they don't have to go to that length to get good shots and good pictures and to make a good report.
That's,
but they are learning. They are learning. You know, we get 1,000 hits a week on our website. I'm sorry, 1,000 hits a month on our website. So people are reading what they're reading, and I'm just hoping that we're putting some people in the right direction. Of course, there's going to be that group that is more comfortable sitting at home behind a computer discovering Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But
do you have any books out or any in the offing?
No. The only thing, we put out white papers, which are listed on the in the website in green under cases of under investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And they can print those or copy them. They're all in PDF. Probably the only one that we're going to be a little different with is going to be the Todd Sees case, because there's so much information, so much paperwork, so many statements and so many articles, that my little, when I started, I had a little 1-inch binder. That's now an 8-inch binder. Takes me and my two dachshunds to carry it.
But the Todd Sees case is not really a mutilation case, right? But
but it definitely has all the trappings of an abduction.
Abduction that obviously went wrong.
That went wrong.
Good Lord. Yeah. So, okay, so what is your website again?
What's that?
Your website.
Oh, it's www.PA, all one word, PAUFOsearch.com.
PAMUFON.com. Right?
It's PA.
Yeah.
UFO search, all one word.
Oh. Oh, okay. Where am I getting
.com.
Where am I getting PA MUFON from?
Not for me.
Oh. Forget that, listeners. P.A. MUFON. Go there another time. But right now, and he's going to give it to you one more time. Go ahead.
It is www.paufosearch.com. And if they would like to contact us, whether they want something researched or whether they just want to ask a question, we'll be glad to help them. If it's an old case and they need some research on it, we'll be glad to help them. We don't charge anything for anything. We're self-funded. When they go to the front page of the website, they'll see up in the corner it says contact us. If you click on that, just tell us what you'd like the information on, or if you want help with something, or if you're going to purchase a piece of equipment and you need some advice or anything like that, we'll be glad to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
We do cases all over the country, not just Pennsylvania. So if somebody out in New Mexico has something they want to talk about or have us look into for them, we have our own two databases that we use. Plus, we use four other databases, and we have a government database that we use. So we can pretty much find pretty much anything we're looking for anymore. The only thing that we've just done now, we put some legal staff on to the group, only because of problems with FOIA requests, getting jerked around. You know, you send in a FOIA request for some information, you get all the thing back. Well, you sent it to the wrong person. You need to send it here. Then you send it there, and they say, oh, no, you sent it to the wrong guy. You got to send it here. So we put some legal staff on now. We have two lawyers on staff that handle that stuff for us. Yeah. And that has cleared up a lot of garbage, because you can waste a lot of time with a FOIA report, a request.
I had John Greenwald on the show, and he says the best place to get documentation from America is from Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. It's true. I mean, Canada, you know, they come, there's a group up there. I'm going to say it's called the Canadian UFO Research Group.
All right.
And I'm not real sure of that name. So if I did say it wrong and they're listening, I apologize. But I was looking for some information on something that happened up in New York State a number of years ago. It was an animal mutilation at a zoo. And I found very little of it here.
Yeah.
Some newspaper reports and, of course, the skeptics and, of course, then the storytellers.
Right.
But they sent me documents that prove it happened, when it happened, and some stuff that happened at a local morgue and all kind of stuff.
Wow.
I couldn't get that here.
Yeah.
When I sent a FOIA request into New York State, I never even got an answer.
Yeah. Okay, Butch, I'm sorry we're out of time, but Butch Witkowski, thank you so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Okay. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all of the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. Please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. So until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
WHFR, Dearborn. WHFR, the station making waves, proudly presents The Best of Broadway, a program featuring the best of American musical theater. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Joe, your host. We've taken care of your tickets. Now let me escort you through 2 hours of enjoyment of The Best of Broadway. WHFR, Dearborn.